I was sitting here about to write my blog for the evening, and we heard a knock at the door. My other half went down to answer the door and shouted upstairs, it's the police. And in their own words, they said, you've posted something online that somebody didn't appreciate. And they wouldn't tell me what that was. I said, well, this could be anything. We'll tell you that when we get to the station. And it very soon dawned on me that they were actually arresting me. And they loaded me into a cage in the back of a police van. And drove me all the way to Harrogate, which is about an hour from here. Was just basically thrown in a cell until they were ready to talk to me. At which point it was revealed it was the F Hamas, F Palestine meme that had been posted. This guy was clearly oblivious to the fact that Hamas was a proscribed organization, didn't even know who they were. I asked him if he knew about 710 and he's got this blank stare. Clearly they simply do not understand and they don't know what they're doing or why, and this results in rounding people up in the middle of the night. I didn't get back here till about gone four, I think. By lunchtime, I'd already spoken to The Spectator, The Telegraph, Jerusalem Post, ABC, Fox News, and then the video itself got 3.5 million views. It was just a complete humiliation for North Yorkshire Police. I firmly believe the fact that the video went viral, that was the humiliation for them that would have influenced their decision. They'd have attempted a prosecution. They would have dug the hole even deeper for themselves.
Explain a few steps.
Yeah.
In terms of that, basically, our hate crime team reviewed it and said there are fences there we need to explore.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the time is 21:31 around arrest for what's referred to as Section 19.
Section 19?
I'll explain it in a second. You don't have to say anything, but how many defence you not mention when questioned, something which relates to the court, if you do say, maybe get evidence. Basically, the Section 19 refers to spreading what we say like racial hatred. So you've posted something online that we believe is spreading racial hatred.
Twitter, Facebook,
I can't explain too much. It's just to give you the context beforehand.
Let me put to you an interview.
Because I appreciate you've never been arrested before, have you?
Yeah, once or twice.
Once or twice, apologies.
Frequent flyer.
Apologies, I didn't think you were. Basically, how it works now is then, obviously, if you've got stuff you'd like to gather, obviously, I'm more than willing to talk through what you're able to take with you.
What, you're taking me away now?
Yes. So you're under arrest, so you're going to Harrogate, unfortunately.
You're taking me to Harrogate in the middle of the night over a tweet?
I am, unfortunately.
Is this what you signed up the police to do?
This is my role. I'm trying to be reasonable with you here.
So
if there's stuff you'd like to gather, I'm more than willing to allow you to gather some sort of stuff, like medication, if you've got any numbers you need. But at the moment,
you join the police to go and arrest people at night for tweets online.
Okay. Do you need any medication? I can't imagine that you are going to be in very long, but do you need any medication that you take at night?
No.
No.
No. Do you need anything else you can think of? Wallet? Do you want to change your shoes or all?
I'd like to put some shoes on, if that's all right with you.
Of course it is.
Righty, huh?
We will give you a search here.
Search?
What? Yeah, just to make sure there's nothing in your pocket that you can harm yourself with whilst you're being transported in the van. We're going to do it in here, rather than outside so all your neighbours can go up.
Oh, fill your boots, mate. You do understand that I'm going to make a maximum fuss about this free speech union.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys are just doing your jobs, obviously, but your dickhead bosses have just opened up a world of shit.
If I didn't have to be here, I wouldn't have been, but I'm happy to give you...
I'm quite certain you two have got, like, 50 better things to do. Because what's your patch? Your Harrogate, Northallerton...
We're referred to as Hambleton. So
yeah.
We're also Harrogate District.
But, of course, the police have... They're not going to be able to credibly tell anybody that they're under research. Now, if they're sending people out to arrest people for tweets, there's no point us debating it, is it? It's your dickhead bosses. Could you right? Yeah, just a sec. Would you?
We'll be taking that for us, unfortunately.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, just a second before you do.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. I have a very special guest for you today, and that is someone that many of you may know as the Northern Variant. Otherwise known as the commentator and general based person, Peter North. Peter, hello.
Hello.
it's a pleasure to have you on here at last. So let's start off then, as it's quite recent, with your adventures of the 25th of September, I think it was. Some viewers may be familiar with this, and you've talked about it and you've tweeted about it, and now we can talk about it because as of a few days ago, no further action is being taken. So what exactly went on and why?
I was sitting here about to write my blog for the evening, and we had a knock at the door. My other half went down to answer the door and shouted upstairs, "Pete, it's the police." Being a commentator, blogger, and Twitterer, you're always kind of, you're never quite surprised when these things happen. Because you're always expecting it. It could happen to any one of us at any time. So because I've seen all the same videos you undoubtedly have, I immediately put on the camera and started recording. And all the advice is, you never let the police in. But I thought, well, you know, what's this going to be? They're going to want to just... tell me off and then bring me in for an appointment at some local police station. That's how I imagined it was going to go.
You'd been spoken to by them before, hadn't you? A couple of years earlier, I think you wrote.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, I had a couple of PCSOs knock on the door and said that I'd written something that was horribly offensive on Facebook. And I said, well, you have to narrow it down because that's pretty much everything I put on Facebook. So since they couldn't narrow it down, I closed the door in their faces and that was the last I heard of it. But these guys, I said, come on in. Would you like a coffee? Sit down. And they said, no, we're not sitting down. We're here on business. We want to talk to you. And in their own words, they said, you've posted something online that somebody didn't appreciate. And they wouldn't tell me what that was. And and I said, well, you know, this could be anything. We'll tell you that when we get to the station. And it very soon dawned on me that they were actually arresting me. And you can see from the video, he's putting his rubber gloves on, ready for a full search. And rounded up.
About 9:30 at night. So the neighbours could see the police van.
And they loaded me into a cage in the back of a police van and drove me all the way to Harrogate, which is about an hour from here, because they've closed all the local police stations. So got there and was just basically thrown in a cell until they were ready to talk to me. At which point it was revealed it was the F Hamas, F Palestine meme that had been posted by David Atherton, Tommy Robinson and others. And what was interesting was during the police interview, they were impressing upon me, the first thing they asked me was, do you know Tommy Robinson? And they're like, well, I'm aware of him. And they were like, Do you know he was the first person to post that meme? And I said, well, that's not a fact. That's not an established fact. We don't know where it came from. This guy was clearly oblivious to the fact that Hamas was a proscribed organization, didn't even know who they were. I asked him if he knew about 710, and he's got this blank stare. So clearly the plod have been tasked with policing the internet, and it's an ecosystem they simply do not understand, and they don't know what they're doing or why. And this results in rounding people up in the middle of the night.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. I mean, yes. when the police were established, or not when they were established, a bit after they were established, the view was taken that police officers should be from the kind of social class they're policing, i.e. working class, whatever, lower middle, because then they understand them and they understand how they think and they understand what motivates them, and they have an intuitive understanding of how to solve these kinds of crimes. And now you're asking people that are not particularly academically intelligent, they might have good instincts, but they're not particularly sort of academic, to make judgments on whether something is in line with extremely complicated, wordy legislation. Or
yeah, it's completely above their pay grade, and it's, and worse still, it's being passed down to young and inexperienced cops, because there's just been this massive brain drain of anyone vaguely competent with a few years under the belt, because the conditions are crap, the pay's not great, but because they closed down all the local police stations, they're spending half their shifts coming out all the way from Harrogate into my little North Yorkshire village and then all the way back. And then that's a couple of hours booking in, and all the paperwork that goes with it. And they're basically glorified taxi drivers. And so you're not getting thoughtful, adaptive, clever people doing the job. You're just getting goons that are obeying orders.
Why did you, speaking of people that are goons that are obeying orders and that mindset, any solicitor, I think, would have told you just to not say anything. So why did you cooperate?
Well, primarily because I am massively, massively claustrophobic. And my only thought of at that particular time, bearing in mind these are particularly hostile environments, anytime you think you're prepared, these places strip you of your preparation. You're actually vulnerable when you're in their facility. And my only thought was, I need to get out of here as quickly as possible. And had I asked for a solicitor, they might not have turned up till, you know, it could have even been 2 o'clock in the afternoon the following day, just trapped in a cell by myself. So I took a gamble. I was just going to go for a no comment interview. But when it came to the interview, I thought, well, they're trying to get me to self-incriminate. And so I can discuss the matter with them so long as I'm careful. You know, I wasn't born yesterday. I knew roughly where they were going with their line of questioning, and they were attempting to prove intent to spread racial hatred. And it's like, well, it's Hamas. It's a proscribed organization. If you were to take that meme in question and break it down into its constituent parts and elaborate on it to meet the 600 or 700 word standard, it would just as easily be an article in The Spectator.
Yes. One of the things that you noted in your blog post on it was that you are... You were autistic, you had a Tourette's episode, and you had palpitations as a consequence.
Yes, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I know everybody says I've got autism, and it's the thing of the day that everybody's got. But I'm firmly aware that it is a spectrum, and I have a form of Tourette's that's provoked by incredibly stressful situations and being claustrophobic. Even the thought of being stuffed into those vans, I get stuck in a stammer loop. And it's really quite unpleasant. And it's once I was actually in the cage, I just shut down. It's a high functioning condition. It's on the autism spectrum. I wouldn't go around saying I'm autistic in the sort of Rain Man sense, because that's clearly not the case. But a neurodivergent would have been the correct terminology.
So, have you actually been diagnosed with some form of autism?
I've never bothered, because the only real reason you go to those extents is if you're looking for special treatment or benefits, and I'm looking for neither. It's just one of those things that I cope with. because generally day-to-day life doesn't put me in that position. It tends to be only when you have goons knocking on your door at 9:30 at night that that it puts you into that frame of mind. But it manifests on a more subtle level. Tourette's isn't what most people understand Tourette's to be, just blurting out random swear words. It can be any kind of tic and not necessarily verbal, but it but stressful situations particularly.
I watched an episode of a TV series called Undateables, and there was this quite pretty black girl who had Tourette's, but she was a fundamentalist Christian or had been raised as one. And so swearing was so bad for her that she'd do things like Thunderbirds, Thundercats, just to say like random names of TV programs. I don't know much about it. What are the subtle expressions of Tourette's?
It evolves over time. It's not one thing, but certainly if I get really intrusive memories, I'll get tics or stammers, you know, kind of like that. But occasionally I will just shout cats for no particular reason. I don't know where that came from, and it's something that happened sort of later on in my life. I've always had tics, but the verbal tic, that's a relatively new development, so it's a curious condition.
So did it start to develop when? How old were you?
I've always had it, but the verbal tic sort of started appearing about 10 years ago.
And how old are you?
I'm 46.
Okay. So is it particularly restrictive in life, or is it something that's manageable?
Oh, it's manageable. This is why I never bothered with a formal diagnosis, but it's one of those things you just live with. Everyone's got their own cross to bear, and this is mine.
Presumably, though, if it's an autism spectrum trait, then one of the markers of autism is poor theory of mind and basically accidentally offending people and not understanding how people will react to things and all of this sort of thing. I did a video on it years ago, a book called something like An Autistic Person's Guide to the Law or to the Police. I forget what the book was called. And it was a self-published book. And the author argued that people who are on the autism spectrum are in serious trouble, when more than anybody else would be, when they get involved with the police, because they don't correctly anticipate how they will come across.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. In my case, I just don't care because I've been, you know, this ain't my first rodeo, and I demand the right to speak my opinion. That's a principles thing, and I don't care who's offended. And if the police want to knock on my door over the fact someone's been offended, well, it's none of their business, as they've just found out to their cost and their massive humiliation. But yeah, there is an aspect to it of not really understanding how people react to the things that you say. When I'm introduced to people, people will say, he's a bit strange, but he's basically okay, which is the classic, he's an asshole, you'll get used to it. I'm a northerner by nature, so kind of lacking tact in that sense, but this certainly amplifies it considerably. I'm not one for reading social cues.
I suspect the tone. It's that when you said, "Oh, it could be extended to 700 words, and it could be an article in the Spectator." Well, I mean, if you look at the tone of it, fuck Palestine, fuck Hamas, fuck Islam. Want to protest? Fuck off to a Muslim country and protest.
Yeah, and that's essentially what it is. It's tone policing.
Even I can see, and people accuse me of being on the spectrum and whatever, and even I can see that a stupid person that has been inculcated with woke ideology, i.e. a policeman, is going to react to that like, oh, it's racist. We've been told to look out for the racism. Oh, it's racist because Islam, they're brown people. and that means it's racist and you know, stupid person in a position of power. Look at the tone.
Yes.
Oh, he's angry. He's angry with brown people. Oh, he must be motivated by racial hatred, our Annie.
That's precisely it, yeah.
It's better to go around there at 9:30 and knock on his door and arrest him because, you know, it's racist. He's a stupid person, which is the police. I'm sorry, it is.
The other part of it, of course, is their time management, because they have Fridays, Saturday nights, which no doubt are bedlam. But that particular Thursday night, I was the only person in the custody suite. The place was dead, nobody else around. And so this is how they fill their quiet time. It's just something to do. And it's a nice, easy, safe way of killing a shift where you have to drive out here, takes an hour, they were here for an hour, drive me back. So by the time I get to the police station, this has already killed 3 hours of their shift, that they've not been threatened or had to take any risks or had to do any thinking. Then they've got me for 3 hours in the station as they fill in the paperwork. And then, you know, before you know it, it's at 6 hours, that's half a shift, completely obliterated with nonsense, where they're not actually having to do anything. And so this is how they use their time.
Anyway, so this was on the 25th of September. And as I understand it, that they said that you would have to go back there in person on the 21st of December.
Yes.
To see whether the Crown Prosecution Service were going to press charges. But then things rather unraveled, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I joined the Free Speech Union and they put me in touch with a Manchester firm and a very good guy. He largely confirmed my suspicions that this would never see the inside of a courtroom. So all it took was a letter. And they sent me a notice of no further action. But I firmly believe the fact that the video went online and went viral in a real sense, it went viral. That was the humiliation for them that would have influenced their decision, because I didn't get back here till about four in gone four, I think. So by lunchtime, I'd already spoken to Dave Shipley for the Spectator, somebody for the Telegraph, Jerusalem Post, a few others, and then in the afternoon, I was speaking to American agents, so that went to ABC, Fox News. It just exploded. And then the video itself got, just on X, got 3.5 million views. And it was just a complete humiliation for North Yorkshire Police. So and there's nothing they could have done with this one. If they'd have attempted a prosecution, they would have dug the hole even deeper for themselves.
What was the kind of response that you got, the reaction that you got from, because these are, I mean, you're as it were, what you know, there's the I don't know what we call the, you know, you're out there in terms of being right wing, okay? You've been involved with,
yeah.
You've been involved with the Homeland Party or whatever. Don't be associated with so and so, and don't be associated with so and so, and basically cowardice. On the general based right, they'll say, "Oh yeah, I agree with this person." Yeah, like, even with me, like, people say, "Oh yeah, Eddie, yeah, oh yeah, I watch your videos. Oh yeah, they're great. Will you come on my show?" No. And you get this, and so with you, but you're absolutely out there, but yet you're talking to people who are on the sort of overtly on the mainstream right, like the Telegraph or whatever, or the Free Speech Union, but they're obviously quite sympathetic.
Well, I think. While my views are in the category of beyond the pale, I think where I'm different is I do quite a lot of long-form posting that actually explains the evolution of my thinking and all of my political positions, however abrasive or offensive they might be. I've reasoned myself into that position. This is not just raw bigotry falling out of me for clicks and likes. I'm actually making an argument, and the way I argue my case, it's a continuum across all my different platforms. And so it is the distilled version of that tweet is very much an opinion, and it's very much my opinion, and I reserve the right to speak it. And so there's, as I say, if that had been distilled into a Spectator column, it wouldn't have looked out of place if it had have been written by Douglas Murray. So it is a fairly a fairly pedestrian opinion. And what I found actually was I spend a lot of my time analysing the right, and I end up beating certain people up online. I've got as many enemies on the right as I have on the left. And so there's quite a lot of people who bear grudges against me. But on this, there was just complete solidarity. And I had people I never imagined speaking to ever again popping up in my DMs saying, whatever our differences of opinion, this is absolutely disgusting. So probably for the first time in, well, ever, I really felt like I had universal backing of the right, and it was really quite humbling. It was because the outpouring of support was, far beyond what I deserve. So, it was really reassuring. And though it was quite a traumatic incident, I was very confident the following day that there would be no personal repercussions for me, that it wouldn't see the inside of the courtroom, and I had good people behind me. So thanks to the Free Speech Union, I was able to get in touch with a solicitor who I could trust, because that I could have handled this myself, but I just didn't want to. It's always better to have someone who knows the ropes that you can trust. And you can go to any solicitor in the country off your own back, but you never quite know what their political views are and whether they understand the dynamics of the free speech debate. Whereas you can be assured if you go through FSU, they will put you in touch with someone who is on side, allied. And even if they don't agree with your opinion, they do actually respect the dynamics in play, that people must be able to express their lawful opinions.
I never have any time. I'm extremely disorganized. Things basically overwhelm me. I don't know why this is. It's probably some sort of genetic thing. I'm basically present-oriented, a fast life history strategist. I really should find out more. And in order to do so, I should probably read this book, Blueprint, by Robert Plomin. It's a fantastic book, and it looks at the genetics of our psychology, the genetic reasons why we have the kind of personalities we have, why we have the kind of intelligence we have. Maybe that would help me make sense of why I'm like I am. I should read that book. But the problem is, as we've established, I never have any time. So I don't really see how I can read it. Or so I thought, until I discovered Legion.com. What Legion.com does is it takes the most basic and interesting books, including Blueprint by Robert Plomin, and it summarises them into just 25 minutes, and then it allows you to listen to those books. That's my problem solved. Legion.com. And if you sign up today with the code TJH, then you will get 10% off. Legion.com, all the base knowledge from your phone straight into your brains.
Yes, and so eventually, so you were under this, pressure then for over a month, or month? How long? About a month.
Yes, it was about a month. Yeah, almost exactly.
That you could be going to court. But the solicitor had presumably advised you that it was unlikely.
That was our shared view, yeah. As I say, this isn't my first rodeo, and when it comes to things like this, I have a reasonably good understanding of the inner workings of the machine. So these things don't keep me awake at night, but it's the immediate impact on my family, who they didn't understand what was going on or why I'd been carted away in the middle of the night. And certainly it took its toll on my missus. And she works in the university sector. And, she had this trauma in through the night, goes into work, and she can't even talk about it because she would then be associated with me. And that would be, a right-wing person. You're connected to a right-wing person in a university. And so there's the whole ostracization and constructive dismissal they put you into. So, you know, there's... it ripples out, and it's the people around you that it takes the greatest toll on.
Yeah, I suppose so, particularly if they are, as it were, normies, whether actually or just for social purposes. Mm. Then they have to deal with, you know, idiots who are inculcated, and it must be very, very difficult. Yes, so you were told there would be no further charges. So let's go back a bit then. So tell me a bit about tell us a bit about your start in life and your journey into becoming an autistic Tourette syndrome far right agitator who shouts cats randomly. how did this occur? How are you? You're from the north of England. We know that.
Yes.
And, How did this baseness process occur?
Well, it's twofold, really. As is known, my dad is Dr. Richard North of the Great Deception fame, basically the definitive Eurosceptic handbook, as it were. So I was born into a very political family. And of course, growing up in Bradford, which is encroaching on 50% Pakistani, you were very aware of the impact of mass immigration. And then come 9/11, 7/7. Prior to all of that, the Asians in Bradford, that's what they were. They were Asians. You didn't make a distinction, Indian, Bangladeshi, whatever. They were just, you know, brown people. Nobody ever thought much of it. But after the 9/11, you very rapidly began to make the distinction. And then you could see Bradford was a predominantly Muslim city. And so that does politicize a person. I've certainly got stories to tell from growing up in Bradford. But of course, I took a lot of time out from about 2014 onwards to prepare for the Brexit referendum, because I was going to campaign full time, and that just spiraled. And I kept a daily blog of everything involved in Brexit, and that went on till just about the beginning of lockdown. After which I'd been writing, blogging almost daily for the better part of 10 years. And it was about that time, just after lockdown, I thought, well, it's about time I got my head back in the real world. But when you've been immersed in politics and our business for as long as I have, the chances of going back into the normal world and relating to ordinary people ever again are zero. And so I tried my hand at going back into computer programming, but it turns out I'm a far better writer than I am a programmer. So this is my life now.
So did you go to university or something and study computer science?
Not at all. No, I fell out of my A levels age 17 because I was unchallenged, completely bored by it. And South Bradford has an absolutely enormous 30-acre chemical plant. And if you're South Bradford and you fall out of school and you've got a little bit of intelligence, that's where you end up working. So I went in as a data inputter and then realized I just had a natural flair for data. So became a database programmer, software applications developer, spiraling through several jobs in that particular company, going on to heavier mainframe stuff, and then culminating in several years working down at Hilton for Airbus. So, reasonably accomplished IT career, but all the time, you know, from my entire upbringing, my dad was a writing partner with Christopher Booker of the Sunday Telegraph, and he would speak to Chris Booker at least two hours a day on the phone, where my dad would be explaining the mechanics of EU regulation. So I think me and my sister were experts on EU regulation by the ages of 12. So we were oddballs to begin with, and so from that foundational knowledge, I was possibly very well equipped to argue the Brexit case, knowing as much as I do, and actually having a profound interest in the subject of regulation, because it is inherently interesting once you get climbing into energy regulation. Food safety is particularly fascinating. All of the things the EU does, that put me in a pole position to be writing about trade deals and everything that fell out of the Brexit debate.
Yeah, I think your father was involved in UKIP, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was among the small team of full-time activists around the time of Alan Sked's leadership, going all the way up to winning their first few handful of MEPs.
I think I recognise that, because when I was, about a year old, a year younger than you, when I was about 16, I was doing work experience as a solicitor's office. And I was very excited about the fact that there was about to be an election, and it was going to be a big election. There was going to be a change, you know. So this is whatever, like September 96. And you only had to put up 50 candidates to get a party political broadcast. There was going to be this loads and loads of parties. And I wrote off, of course, in those days, no internet. I used the telephone directory. I'm sure that there was a series of chaps that were at the UK, in the UKIP Inquirer pack they sent me. There was a series of people with, you know, I photographed. I'm sure one of them was a Richard North.
Yeah, no doubt.
Along with Alan Sked and someone called Natras or something.
Yes, Mike Natras, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think I can just about, I can just about see. It's a sort of genetic thing that in your family to be anti-European and conservative. It's just been sort of passed on. You didn't want to
essentially
repair.
Yes, yeah. Some say I'm a weapon system groomed for politics, but with serious malfunctions and major cost overruns.
So you didn't go through a phase of being anti your dad and left wing and proto-woke,
but never. I've never been left-wing at all. My dad was an environmental health inspector before he got into politics, and so he was out on the road doing inspections, and we hardly ever saw him during the week. It was only weekends that we saw him, and then around my 11th birthday, I kind of got a formal introduction to him when he took me down to Duxford to explain the mechanics of flight, the mechanics of free markets and liberal economics. And that's where I get my education. So when he talked about free markets and all of that, it just made sense to me. And socialism, it never appealed to me at all. I was never a social liberal. During my university years, all of my, I didn't actually go to university, but when all my friends sort of moved off to Leeds to do creative courses at Leeds Uni, I moved across to Leeds and learned how to DJ and do all the things that a young man does. And all my friends were radical anarcho-lefty types, sort of reclaim the streets, animal rights and all of that. And I never bought into any of that politics. I thought it was a fashion statement and I thought it was utterly ridiculous. They were all those sort of dreadlocked hippie types. I just liked the music. I'm possibly Britain's only radical right-wing acid techno DJ.
I was never left wing either. I never went. I just found them horrifying as a child. So you make visceral associations when you're a child, and so they were called the Labour Party. And then I was listening to a Roald Dahl audiobook of revolting rhymes, and there's this bit where the judge says 10 years hard labour in the clink, and I said to my mum, what's that mean, hard labour? It's just like breaking rocks and stuff, you know, like painful, hard labour. I was like, well, but there's, and I thought to myself, I must have been about 7, 8, or there's a party called the Labour Party, and they want that. They want that. That they sound awful. And then the leader of that party was bald and ginger and Welsh. And these things together.
Well, for me, it was the left in Bradford was your sort of Trotskyite types with the socialist worker stalls in town on a Saturday. And they just looked like losers to me. And it was always just, radical leftism is a loser's creed. And Bradford famously has a communist nightclub. It's in an old mill. It's called the 1 in 12, and the bottom floor is the sort of dance floor and band room. The second floor is a sort of smaller chill-out room, and then the top floor is a vegan cafe with a huge communist library attached to it. And this was the place to be for aspiring young intellectuals and radicals. And it was a factory of just left-wing activism. And for some reason, they ended up being my friends. I never quite understood why. I think in Bradford, you don't have great many choices, and there isn't such a thing as a local youth conservative movement. But, when I started going off to raves and hanging out in that particular club, I gained a real insight into the politics of the left and how much of it was just a virtue signalling pose, and for all their pretensions to intellectualism. I don't think a single one of those books in that communist library had ever actually been read. So.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have imagined so. No. I very quickly called it's that they you it, you... It's a very basic thing. It's even in the Bible, like this idea that you don't do nice things to show off about doing nice things. You do nice things and just do them, and other people shouldn't hear about it. Just do the nice things, and that's its own reward. Whereas what you get with leftism is A, they don't do nice things, but B, they go, even if they do, they go on about it. So it's they want to make it absolutely clear. You know, they'll say, "Oh yeah, oh, our hearts and our thoughts and prayers are with this," or whatever. Even something like wearing a poppy, I take the view.
Yeah.
I can understand people that say, "Well, hang on, go and give the money to the British Legion, right? And shut up. Why do you have to walk around wearing a poppy for? Oh, because you're purity signaling. It's right wing virtue signaling. You're purity signaling that you support this right wing cause. Fuck off."
The other part of it, so much of it was wrapped up in this identity of being anti-Thatcher. Long after Thatcher had actually...
Are you ready for the future of the West?
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear the full thing, as well as help with my other projects, then please become a subscriber at jollyheretic.com.